book of Hosea again. We were there Sunday morning and Sunday evening. I'd like to go to the 11th chapter, book of Hosea, chapter 11. And we'll read verse 9. I will not execute the fierceness of my anger. I will not return to destroy Ephraim, for I am God and not man, the Holy One in the midst of thee, and I will not enter into the city. We want to take the thought of the message from this statement from God, for I am God and not man. What is said there is, of course, infinitely so, for I am God and not man. The intent of this statement from God is not a criticism of man. The intent is an exaltation of himself, an exaltation of God. The emphasis of this statement is not the inferiority of man. The emphasis is the superiority of God. So those words, for I am God and not man, they of course are a declaration of the greatness of God. The subject of God being superior to man is a theme that cannot be exhausted, cannot even be fully comprehended. But in our text, this statement, I am God and not man, is put forth as a reason for something. And that is indicated by the word for or because. And then follows a twofold statement concerning what God would not do. Again, this is addressed to the northern kingdom of Israel. And he says, I will not execute the fierceness of my anger, though they were deserving of such. And then he says, and I will not return to destroy Ephraim, their largest tribe, though once again they were deserving of such. The reason for these two statements, the reason that he would not execute the fierceness of his anger, the reason he would not destroy Ephraim, I am God and not man. I am God and not man. So in those two phrases, I will not, twice, I will not, is the subject of God's mercy. So in the context, he is saying that he is infinitely more gracious, more merciful, more long-suffering, and far more willing to forgive than man ever can be. For I am God and not man. Again, this is not the emphasis is not a criticism of man. The emphasis is an exaltation of God. What man cannot do by reason of the narrowness and shallowness of his own goodness, God can and will do by reason of the height, the depth, the length, and the breadth of his immeasurable love. So you read verse 9, and you see this truth. The reason for his mercy toward man is himself, not man. Again, read it. It says, I will not return to destroy Ephraim. Why? For I am God. That's the reason. The reason's not in Ephraim. And then I will not execute the fierceness of mine anger. The reason? God. God is the reason. So in this context, for I am God and not man, these are really astonishing words. They're very amazing words. They're truly remarkable words. So we want to speak tonight on God's love and mercy. Exalt it, because that's the context here of I am God and not man. And though it's true in so many ways that God is not man, we want to consider it strictly within the context of God's love, His mercy, His long-suffering. And again, the emphasis is not the narrowness and the shallowness of man's goodness, but the emphasis is upon the astonishing greatness of God's goodness to sinful man. I am God and not man. And I pray that we would go from here amazed and praising God for His abundant love and mercy bestowed upon us. But before we get to that statement, for I am God and not man, we have a portrait of a blessed but rebellious people. Leading into our text, the Lord, through Hosea, reminds Israel what He had done for them in grace and mercy and in love, and also how they behaved toward Him. And what we read in verses 1 through 7 of Hosea chapter 11 is really a God review of their history. God shows them their history. And we'll just, I'm not going to say a whole lot about any of these points, but just notice. In verse 1, God loved them with a special love. He said, when Israel was a child, then I loved him. That is, when they had no wisdom, when they had no strength to glory in, their ignorance and weakness did not hinder, did not prevent God from loving them. You see, God's love does not depend upon the standard of our spiritual attainments. When thou wast a child, it is a love despite ourselves. And that's why we read in Ephesians 2, verses 4 and 5, but God, who is rich in mercy, for His great love wherewith He loved us, even when we were dead in sins. So they were a loved people. Notice also in verse 1, they were a delivered people. He says, I called my son out of Egypt. I called them, I brought them out of the darkness, the sorrow, and the bondage of Egypt. I delivered them that they might be a separated people unto myself. Concerning our own history, we read in Colossians 1 and verse 13, who hath delivered us from the power of darkness and hath translated us into the kingdom of His dear Son. That's our own testimony. We also read in 1 Peter 2 and verse 9, who hath called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. We too are a loved people. We too are a blessed people. We too are a delivered people. Notice also in verse 1, they are, God adopted them. He refers to them as my son, They belonged to God. Notice also in verse 3, God taught and gently led them. He says, I taught Ephraim also to go, taking them by their arms. Just as a parent would take a child by the arms and leading them to walk, God says, I taught them. I taught you. I gently led you. Verse 3 is a picture of His divine care. It's a picture of His patience. We also see in verse 4 that God drew them. He said, I drew them with cords of a man. That is, as you read on there, it's as men do with their cattle, with bands of love. As I didn't draw them with iron bonds, I didn't drag them, but with tender and effective tie of love, I drew them. I drew them to myself. We also see in verse 4 that God cared for them. I was to them as they that take off the yoke on their jaws, and I laid meat unto them. Again, a picture here is being drawn of men and their cattle. The bit is removed. The yoke is lifted off the shoulder. And food is provided for that ox or whatever. A picture of refreshment. And God says, that's what I did for you. I removed the yoke. And I laid meat before you. I have refreshed you over and over and over. And we see in our text, at the last part of our text in verse 9, the Holy One in the midst of thee. So God was present with them. So you put all that together. You see that they were a loved people. They were a God-delivered people, a God-adopted people, a God-taught and led people, a God-drawn people, a God-cared-for people, and a people blessed with the very presence of God Himself. And now notice the behavior of these people. They refused the message of God, and they listened to other voices. Notice verse 2. As they called them, that they would refer to the prophets, God's men. So they went from them. They sacrificed unto Balaam and burned incense to graven images. So God, throughout their history, sent His men unto them with the message of God, calling upon them to worship the Lord, calling upon them to serve the Lord. And what did they do? They turned a deaf ear to the men of God. They turned a deaf ear to the message of God. They not only turned a deaf ear, but they turned their backs to them. And the more these prophets called upon them, the more they declared the Word of God to them, the further the people went away. Until eventually, of course, they offered incense unto graven images. They were idolaters. We see also they did not recognize God's hand in their life. Verse 3, I taught Ephraim also to go, taking them by their arms. But they knew not that I healed them. They knew not that I healed them. In light of God's tender and compassionate dealings with them, they knew not. They were oblivious to the blessings of God. They were oblivious to the care of God. And may I say, this was willful. This was blatant. They knew not that I healed them. This is true of many of God's people. They know not that God blesses them every single day. They pay no attention to the blessings of God. We see also that they refused to return to God and to His ways. In verse 5, He shall not return into the land of Egypt, but the Assyrians shall be his king, because they refused to return. He's saying they will go into bondage. And the reason is because they refused to return. In spite of the repeated call of God, they declined it every time. And they dismissed God from their lives. Again, all of this is leading up to our main point in verse 9. We see also they put more stock in their own counsels rather than God's counsel. Notice verse 6. And the sword shall abide on his cities and shall consume his branches and devour them because of their own counsels. They took and pursued their own advice, their own guidance and suggestions, rather than thus saith the Lord. That is, the advice of man and the guidance of man and the suggestions of man were considered to be more important than what the Lord said. They had their own counsels. Verse 7, they had this bent away from God. It says, and my people are bent. That is, they are inclined. They are prone to backslide from me. Also, they were a people who refused to reverence God. Notice again verse 7. Though they called, that would be God's messengers, them to the Most High, that the messengers of God, the prophets of God, called the people continually to draw near to the Most High, to leave their ways and come to God. But none at all would exalt Him. They had an irreverence for God. So here we have a people who are blessed of God. But a people who continually and blatantly spurned the love of God toward them. Here was a people oblivious to God in their lives. Here was a people hateful and irreverent toward God. A people who were repeatedly sinning against God and moving further and further and further away from God. So we have this portrait of this people. They are blessed, but they are rebellious, and they are a sinful people. And that brings us to an amazing portrait of God. Again, in the light of, I will not execute the fierceness of my anger. God would judge them. They would go into Assyrian captivity. But God did not display the full fierceness of His anger. And God did not completely destroy them. I will not return to destroy them, for I am God and not man. For I am God and not man. This is mercy. This is the mercy of God. For I am God and not man. What he's doing there is he's giving the reason for his mercy. And the reason is always God himself. Same with grace. The reason for grace is God. It's not us. If it was us, it wouldn't be grace. And the reason for God's mercy is not us. It's God. So he's giving the reason. We want to consider this marvelous declaration from God. For I am God and not man. And consider that statement in light of the fact, do a comparison between God and man. Again, this is in the context of mercy. Man, even the best of men, cannot long forbear his anger. Again, this is not meant to show the inferiority of man. That's not the emphasis. The emphasis is to exalt the mercy of God. Man cannot long forbear his anger. Think about it. The best of men, and I say men, I mean humanity. The best of men are of a very weak spirit. And they have a fickle disposition. And often they are not able to control, to rule their anger. Could you imagine if God was unable to control his anger? We'd be in a heap of trouble. And the best of men at times are unable to control, to rule their anger. But we hear God say, I am God and not man. The very best of men become irritable at times. You ever have a day where you're just irritable? You better thank God that God doesn't get irritable. I am God and not man. And when man becomes irritable, any little offense makes them ready to attack. But God says, I am God and not man. Even the best of men find it difficult to bear anything that annoys them. We all have things that annoy us. Some of the things that annoy us really are no big deal, but they just annoy us. And when we're annoyed, we may react in a way that we normally wouldn't. Hear God say again, I am God and not man. If we had to deal with a God like us, we would have been destroyed a long time ago. There is no man alive, if he knew everything about us, would put up with any of us. I am God and not man. And even those who can forbear more than the ordinary individual, there is a point, and we've all asked this question, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? We all get there. Lord, do I have to forgive him? How many times do I have to forgive? And what did the Lord say? 70 times 7. And be sure of this, you and I have offended God far more than 70 times 7. But because God is not man, we are living monuments of his mercy. In fact, it could be written upon our foreheads, spared by the long suffering and mercy of God. It would be true of every one of us. So hear those words, for I am God and not man. Hear those words in light of the fact that man can get into a state where he is unable to bear with others. A person's ability to restrain their annoyance and their anger often depends a great deal upon the state of their health or their circumstances. If man feels well and all is going well, is it not so that we can put up with a little more than we can when we don't feel well? And when things aren't going well, we can put up with a little more than we can when we have a headache or a toothache, or when everything seems to be falling apart. We're very prone to react in a mean way when we have a headache or a toothache, where our world is falling apart. Man is greatly affected by his circumstances. That's true of all of us, whether we would admit it or not. Should we be? No. But we are. We are affected by our circumstances. Our moods are affected. And I'm thankful that God doesn't get in a bad mood. And when we have adverse circumstances, or when we're not feeling well, are we not more prone to impatience? We have an impatience toward noise, or all kinds of things. Things annoy us that would not annoy us if we were feeling well. And therefore, when we're in those conditions, we tend to deal more severely with others. And a very small offense, we lash out when things aren't going well. Things going fine, we might be able to ignore that little bitty offense. But when the tooth is hurting, circumstances are adverse, that little offense becomes a major problem. But God says, I am God, not man. Thanks be unto God. He's never weak. He's never impetuous. He's never unjust. He is never in a condition where he is looking to take offense, looking to be irritated. But he's always self-contained. Even when God pours out his wrath, he does so in a controlled way. He never loses control of himself. He's always self-possessed. So hear those words, I am God and not man, in the light of this fact also. Man is not too anxious to reconcile to themselves those who have offended them repeatedly, time and time and time again. In fact, when a person commits the same offense over and over and over and over again, that's usually when we say, Lord, how many times does the Lord expect me to forgive? Think about our repeated sins against God. And we all have some that we just commit over and over and over and over again. And we go to God, we confess that sin, and I believe we truly repent of that sin, but it won't be long, and we'll commit it again. Man is far more willing to reconcile when there is no repeated offense. We're far more willing to reconcile when there's a promise, I will not do it again. We're far more willing to reconcile then. And yet, again, we sin repeatedly against God. When Eliphaz, in Job 22 and verse 5, what he said there is true of each of us. He means it, of course, in a derogatory way against Job, but what he says is true. He said, is not thy wickedness great, and thine iniquities infinite? That was true. Job's wickedness was great, And Job's iniquities were infinite. But what Eliphaz did not realize is his wickedness was great and his iniquities also were infinite. It's true of all of us. Our wickedness is great. And who can number the iniquities, all the perversions of sin? But thanks be unto God for those words, for I am God and not man. You see, because man has a tendency to count offenses and to keep track. Psalm 130 verse 3 says, if thou, Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? If God were to count, and God knows every sin we commit, He knows everything about it. But if God were to, if He had the Spirit of counting offenses, no one could stand before God. But God is not man. Man counts offenses. We even have a tendency. I mean, someone sins against us, they do the same thing repeatedly. Pretty soon we'll have the dates down. You did this at such and such a date, at such and such a time. And we keep track. Thank God that God is not man. We also see, again, hear those words, for I am God and not man, in light of the fact that man, who has been greatly wronged, will not make a proposal to go and live with those who have wronged them. Man has a tendency to get away and stay away from those who have wronged them. Husbands leave wives, wives leave husbands. They get away from those who have wronged them. You would not expect a king whose subjects had revolted against him and refused to give him due honor, refused to submit to him, and who had even insulted him and done despite to his character, you would not expect that king to say, I'll leave my palace, I'll leave my splendor, I'll leave all that I have, and I'll go and live amongst that people. I will wear their rags, and I will fare as they fare. I will dwell in their shacks. And I know that when I do that, they will spurn me, they will spit upon me, and they will at last fasten me to a cross to die. But I desire to have them reconciled to me. And I am willing to go and be one with them. You don't expect man to do that. But that is what God has done. For I am God and not man. Again, it's unheard of for a man to say that. But Jesus descended from heaven to earth, became a man, shared our poverty, lived in the midst of our sin, knowing that He would be despitefully entreated, knowing that He would be scorned and scourged and nailed to a cross. And yet He endured it all. Not for His friends, but for His enemies. For His enemies. Thanks be unto God for those words, for I am God and not man. for I am God and not man. Hear those words in the light of this fact. A man who has been greatly wronged will not bear the penalty of the wrong done to him. We will never hear a man say, here's a burglar that's broken into my house, stole everything I had, ransacked the house, and he's been found guilty, and he's been sentenced to prison. And no doubt he deserves to be punished. But will you ever hear a man say, you know what? I'll bear his sentence. I'll go to prison for him so he can go free. Or here's a murderer sentenced to die. A man, will you ever hear a man say, I'll die in his place so that that murder can be accounted or treated as innocent? Again, thanks be unto God for those blessed words, for I am God and not man. Notice, if we turn over to Romans chapter 5, Romans 5, very familiar passage of Scripture. Verses 6 through 8. For when we were yet without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. Never, ever, ever forget. Christ did not die for the righteous. He died for the ungodly. For scarcely for a righteous man will one die. He's saying it's a rare thing that a man would die even for a righteous man. Yet peradventure for a good man some would even dare to die. But God commendeth His love toward us that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. For I am God and not man. Hear those words in light of the fact that man would not press the offender if he refused the pardon. Someone wrongs us, and we do everything in our power. I mean, everything that we can possibly do to make peace. And the offender continually turns his back upon us and says, I don't want anything to do with you. And rejects us over and over and over again. And even shows malice and hatred toward us. Eventually, even the best of men will give up. They're not going to try anymore. I'm not going to put myself through this. I've done everything I can. And they reject me time and time and time again. Man has a point where he stops. It's true with all of us. And we may go further with some individuals than we do others. It's just the way it is. But thanks be unto God, for I am God and not man. Because God came to me and came to you and still does time and time and time and time again and says, before we were saved, I want to be reconciled to you. And He calls us to Himself and we reject over and over and over. Now I realize that's what we're going to do until the call is made effectual. I realize that. But the point is, we reject God over and over and over again. And after we're saved, We do things that destroy fellowship with God. And God comes to us continually on a daily basis to restore fellowship, telling us what we've got to do so fellowship can be restored. And we reject Him over and over and over again. Thanks be unto God that He's not man. Because if He were, none of us would be here. He would have given up on us a long time ago. Also, consider these words, I am God and not man, in light of the fact that man would not love, adopt, honor, and associate with the offending. It is not in man to love those who continually slander our person. It's not in us to love them. I know we're supposed to. God tells us to love our enemies. But it's not in us by nature to do that. Someone slanders us a few times and they apologize and the best of men can forgive them and go on. But even the best of men have a point. That's it. And who among men will take those who seek to injure them and take that individual into his family? That's what God does. And make him a son. That's what God does. Not only make us a son, but makes us an heir of all that he has. Who amongst men is going to take that one who slanders him and seeks to harm him into his own family, make him a son, make him an heir of everything he has, and then not only that, provide for him the rest of his life? That's what God does for us. He provides for us for our entire life. And then be a friend and a companion to him. And trust him with the most precious of things. God calls a man to preach. He does what? He entrusts him with the word. If someone is teaching, God has entrusted that person with the word. Looking at ourselves, apart from God, there's nothing to trust. And yet God trusts us with the most precious of things. Man's not going to do that. Thanks be unto God for those blessed words, for I am God and not man. You see, God takes the wretched sinner just as he is, and blots out his sin, takes him into his family, and they become the objects of his daily care. For I am God and not man. In light of God's abundant mercy, thank God for those words, for I am God and not man. And how many times, again, these are in the context of I will not execute the fierceness of my anger. Does God have a right? Does God have a reason to be angry with us? Oh, you better believe it. He sure does. But how many times does God say, I will not execute the fierceness of my anger? Instead, he seeks to draw us with his love. He says, I am not going to execute the fierceness of my anger upon Dan Gordon today because Dan Gordon's such a special individual. No, because I am God and not man. I will not execute the fierceness of my anger because I am God and not man. I will not destroy him because I am God and not man. We are monuments of his mercy. We are spared by the mercy of God. We need to live in the light of that truth. Never forget it. Again, mercy is God withholding from us what we deserve. When we spurn God, does God have a reason to be angry? He certainly does. Does God have a reason to pour his wrath down upon us? He certainly does. But does he do it all the time? No. Why? Because who he is? Because he's God. Because he's not man. And again, we're applying it strictly in the context concerning the mercy of God. But back in the 80s, I missed my notes this week, lost them in the fire, and back in the 80s, I preached 6 or 7 messages from this verse, "For I am God and not man." Not just applying it to the mercy of God, but there's so many wonderful ways that we ought to thank God that he's not us, but that he is superior to us. What a wonderful God we have to deal with. But don't misunderstand, it's also very serious. When you talk about the judgment of God, when you talk about facing God, you're not facing man. You're facing God. I am God and not man. You see, people's excuses might work before man. They don't hold water before God. I am God and not man. We might be able to fool man, but I am God and not man. So there's a fear in those words also. For I am God and not man. Brother Tim, if you'd come and lead us, verse song.